Before we get into today's episode, I want to share a timely free resource with you. When you look at the headlines, war, instability, constant talk about the end times, it's easy to feel anxious or unsure what to think. But the Bible offers a better way. Our short guide, Watchful, Not Worried, End Times, the Second Coming, and How to Read the News with Biblical Hope, will help you understand what Scripture really says about the end times, so you can live with clarity, hope, and confidence instead of fear. You'll discover how to read the news through the lens of Scripture, avoid speculation, and stay grounded in God's bigger story. Download your free copy today at premierinsight.org/resources. That's premierinsight.org/resources.
If you follow Jesus, you're already doing God's work, not just on Sundays or in church, but in those emails and financial reports, at kitchen tables or on the school run. I'm pastor and author Tom Nelson, and in my new podcast, God's Work, we're going to completely change how you think about your job. So step into my office for some weekly workplace wisdom. Search God's Work with Tom Nelson on Premiere Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources, and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show. It is a great privilege to be joined today by Dr. Jason Lepayavi, who is the C.S. Lewis Associate Professor of Theology and Literature at George Fox University in Oregon, and director of the C.S. Lewis Initiative. Jason, thank you so much for joining us today.
My absolute pleasure.
What I would love to do, Jason, before hearing about some of the really exciting things that you're working on, I'd love to kind of go right back to the beginning and find out, how did you first discover C.S. Lewis and what impact has he had on your faith journey?
So I'm Finnish Canadian, Ruth. My father is from Finnish Lapland and my mother is from British Columbia in Canada. And I was brought up in Finland, but never brought up a Narnian. I never read the Chronicles of Narnia in my childhood. In fact, the first book that I ever read by Lewis was randomly at age 19 during my year in the Finnish military, Problem of Pain. And it was so difficult, but I was so inspired by the marriage of his style and content, or style and substance. Sometimes you find authors with one but not the other. But when these two merge, it's absolutely beautiful. That I just kept on reading more and more and more. That's how I came to learn about Lewis and love him.
And have there been any works that have particularly impacted you along the way, do you think? I mean, I guess you came to him quite late, didn't you? But as you've gone on, obviously that was your first book. But the more you've read, are there particular quotes or books that have really impacted you along your journey?
Well, one of his books really changed the course of not my vocation, but my studies. When I was doing my doctorate on the theology of love, I found an old email or letter that I had sent 10 years earlier during that military year at age 19 or 20 to my girlfriend at the time, in which I tell her about this guy that I've been reading, C.S. Lewis, that she might like. And right now I'm reading his book, The Four Loves, and I'm really intrigued. I really want to understand love more. Then I drop this humorous line and I say, one day I'll be called Dr. Love, as a complete joke, as Dr. Phil or so on. But I had goosebumps when I reread it 10 years later, because wait a minute, here I am doing a doctorate on love. that is so wonderful. I had no idea that I was a prophet, but now I do know that it really foretold my future. Although, when I did my master's, I wrote my thesis on the theology of the body and sexuality of Pope John Paul II. And I wasn't thinking of Lewis at all. But it became clear that I wanted to, for my doctorate, I wanted to expand my project from bodily and sexual love to include other forms of love as well. And then I thought, well, wouldn't it be interesting to compare and contrast the Pope with C.S. Lewis, who I had never studied academically until then, just for pleasure and spiritual formation and intellectual growth. And so that's how I launched my doctorate, but it became very clear very soon that I had bitten a bit too much, and there was so much in Lewis alone that the Pope fell off the wagon for some time.
Poor Pope.
poor Pope. However, others are picking him up. There's when we talk about the conference, there's going to be one, at least one paper on John Paul II, Benedict XVI, and C.S. Lewis, and their thoughts on eros and desire. So I'm glad that other people are spotting the fruitful connection between the two as well.
Great. Well, I really want to speak about this very exciting conference that you've got in September. But before we do that, would you just share a little bit about your journey from Finland, I suppose, via Canada in some senses, to Oregon, where you are now as a professor?
Sure. I'll give you the speed version of it. So born in Finnish Lapland, moved to southern Finland, the capital near Helsinki, where I was raised. Went back to Canada for summer holidays. And as a child, I lived there for 1 year, but mainly we were based in Finland. And then I moved to Tanzania, where I lived for a year and I wrote a book. And from there, I believe I moved to Oxford very soon after and spent 4 years there with a shorter stint in Heidelberg, Germany, where our firstborn was born. So Finland, Canada, Tanzania, England, Heidelberg. And then I got a job in Canada as a professor of religious studies. And we lived in Canada for 6 years. And then I got a dream job at George Fox. And this is my second year, or my sophomore year, as they say here locally, in the US. So that's the story.
Tell us a bit about that dream job. What do you do? Because that is quite a title that you've got.
Yes, it is just amazing. It's almost tailored for me. I could never have believed that there might be a position, a title, C.S. Lewis, a professor of theology and literature. Well, it so happens that I've come to George Fox a few times to guest lecture over the years. So I knew the place and I knew the wonderful ecumenical ethos, and I was very attracted to it, and I had made some friends. So when the job offer came, it was easy to say yes. It so happens that there's a lot of love, starting from the president of the university to the executive dean of the humanities and so on. A lot of love for C.S. Lewis, J.R. Tolkien, and the other members of the Inklings. And they wanted to launch a C.S. Lewis initiative to help foster intellectual growth, spiritual formation, cultural engagement through the study of the theological and the literary and the philosophical works of the Inklings. And I've got the honor and pleasure of directing it with other colleagues and a lot of staff members and students. And we have, the initiative has kind of four kinds of endeavors at the moment. We have student-led projects. First of all, there's a newly formed Lewis Tolkien Student Society. We have curricular enhancements. So we're developing and offering new courses that draw from these deep sources that the Inklings provide. I'm teaching a course this semester called C.S. Lewis's Theories of Love. And next semester, it'll be J.R. Tolkien, Intellect and Imagination. And then it'll be something else. We're developing new courses all the time. And then thirdly, we have community engagement projects. So not many people know that the Portland C.S. Lewis Society, founded in 1972, is the second oldest Lewis Society in the world, soon after the New York Society that was founded in 69. So 1972, that predates the Oxford Lewis Society by a whole decade. So that's wonderful. We partnered with them. We've founded a new chapter closer to the campus. So we have plans for an Inklings and Wine Society where we live. This is wine country. This is the Napa Valley. Napa Valley is in California, but we live in Willamette Valley, which is the wine valley of Oregon. So it's absolutely gorgeous with these rolling hills. It's like the Shire. So we're planning an Inklings and Wine collaboration and Inklings and Poetry. So student-led endeavors, curricular enhancements, community engagement, and finally, scholarship and conferences. So we have become the new academic host of the journal Zane Zucht, the C.S. Lewis journal, which is the only journal among the Inklings journals that's devoted to Lewis exclusively. So we're hosting them, and we went totally open access last year, which was a great move. It's generated some 14,000 full text downloads in its very first year, because we put all the back issues available out there as well. So that was a great move. If you want that your scholarship is read, Zane Zucht is a good option for you. But the project that's been taking most of my time lately is the conference, is the inaugural, the Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference.
Yeah, well, just before we talk about that, Jason, you mentioned obviously that your PhD focused on C.S. Lewis's theology of love, and we're going to be hopefully delving into some of your thoughts on this topic in a later episode of the C.S. Lewis podcast. I'd love to really hear some of your thoughts around that. But just before we chat more about the conference, why do you think people are still so interested in, I suppose in many ways, a random Northern Irish professor of literature who died over 60 years ago? What is the lasting impact? Why are people so interested in C.S. Lewis, do you think, still?
Well, I can name many things. People are still interested in Shakespeare, and he died longer than 60 years ago. This year marks the second, the bicentenary. Is that the right word?
200 years? Bicentenary, yeah.
Bicentenary, thank you, Ruth. Conference in honor of MacDonald's birth, George MacDonald's birth. So Lewis is still very novel compared to some of the historical figures that we still love and study. I think both Lewis and Tolkien will end up in the Western canon. We'll be reading them and talking about them for centuries to come. But I think some of the factors that just keep generation after generation going back to Lewis is what I mentioned earlier, this combination of style and content, or beauty and substance, that he merges so beautifully. You have thinkers who are very deep, deep thinkers, but they cannot express, they cannot make any converts. By converts, I mean travel companions. They cannot write in a way that people find attractive. And on the other hand, you have these beautiful poets that are, at the end of the day, and I quote unquote poets, like people who have a flowering way of expressing themselves on paper and in speech. But at the end of the day, they're rather superficial. So when you have these two marry, it's a very powerful combination. And I think Lewis does that particularly well. You want to go back because he writes so well, even if some of the language is dated nowadays. But he writes so well and beautifully. But you also want to go back because he always has something interesting to say, even if you end up disagreeing with it. And he's very far-sighted. So for example, we're celebrating the 80th year of the publication of The Abolition of Man, which was a very prophetic book, honing in on some of the philosophies that were appearing in 20th century, and in Lewis's view, jeopardizing some of the common sense and wisdom of the past ages. And it is so far-sighted. The Sehnsucht C.S. Lewis Journal has a call for paper, a special volume just devoted for that to that particular book. Maybe the last thing that I could mention, Ruth, is that he was so prolific. He wrote 40 books in his lifetime, and hundreds of poems and essays and thousands of letters in multiple different genres.
Good.
So there are many flavors. It's like an ice cream shop, and you'll find something that suits your taste, whether it's science fiction or children's literature or Christian apologetics or more straightforward mythical novels or scholarship or whatnot. He was so versatile.
I will make sure that there are links to the journal in the show notes of that, because we definitely want people to be submitting papers for that around the abolition of men and getting involved in any other ways that they think they would like to. But let's talk about the inaugural Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference, because you're hosting that in September. Where did the inspiration for this come from? Why did you decide to put it on?
Well, I was given a lot of freedom. There's a lot of love and trust that was shown to me from the higher echelons of power here at George Fox.
Sure.
And I thought, well, the sky's the limit. What would I like to do? What needs to be done? And so I put together a proposal, some would say crazy. I like to think of it as a magnanimous proposal for a large conference. And very quickly got a lot of support for it. And I gathered, I'm not doing this alone. I've got this wonderful group of people, experts from various disciplines and different universities, serving as the planning and steering committee for ideas. And together we've just been able to envision, and not just envision, but we're actually doing it, a very wonderful, comprehensive conference. Some of the motive was to salvage some of the energy and scholarship and camaraderie that took place at the Lewis and Friends Conference that was hosted by Taylor University in Indiana every other year, which has since discontinued. I think the last time they hosted it was 2018. I was slated to speak at the conference, but then COVID killed it. And so we want to salvage some of the energy and the passion and the contributions that the role that conference played in our community of scholars and readers of the Inklings.
And I mean, it's going to be quite a conference, isn't it? You've got, it's a multi-day event featuring lesser-known scholarship of Lewis. You've got everything from sort of keynote speakers to theatrical productions, pre-screeners, short papers. Why was it that you wanted to kind of hone in on the undiscovered parts of C.S. Lewis? Why was that particularly a motivation behind all of this?
Well, that's what's interesting, isn't it? The undiscovered bits. That's what every true scholar is drawn to. But also, this is not just for scholars. This is for lovers of literature and theology. There was a book published a few years ago in memory of the former director of the Wade Center at Wheaton College, Christopher Mitchell, called The Undiscovered C.S. Lewis. And it set out basing it on a talk or a paper that Christopher Mitchell gave years ago. It set out six different categories under the general umbrella of undiscovered C.S. Lewis. And so we're the editor of that volume. Bruce Johnson is the general editor of the Sehnsucht C.S. Lewis Journal, and he's part of our steering committee, and he'll be here, of course, and he'll actually give a short 15-minute history of scholarship on Lewis to launch the conference. So we know where we've been, and he'll situate us on that trajectory in Lewis scholarship. Where are we now and where are we going? So that was a part of the motivation as well.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
If you've ever struggled to fully understand the New Testament or explain your faith with confidence, you're not alone. That's exactly why Premier Insight exists and why your support matters right now. When you give today, we'll send you a special thank you gift, the New Testament You Never Knew Bible Study Guide by N.T. Wright. It will help you understand the context, meaning, and story of Scripture more clearly. And your support helps others do the same through programs like this. So please give your best gift today and request your copy. Just go to premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis. Thank you for helping people engage God's word with wisdom and understanding.
If you follow Jesus, you're already doing God's work, not just on Sundays or in church, but in those emails and financial reports, the kitchen tables, or on the school run. I'm pastor and author Tom Nelson, and in my new podcast, God's Work, we're going to completely change how you think about your job. So step into my office for some weekly workplace wisdom. Search God's Work with Tom Nelson on Premiere Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation. Jason, obviously there are many elements of your revelations about Lewis that you want to keep for the conference in September. So I'm not going to ask you to reveal all of your secrets, obviously. But are there any surprising things that you have discovered about Lewis during your research that you are able to share with us today?
Yes. Well, absolutely. I could share a few things. I focused on Lewis's theories and ideas of love. And one of the things that I found, and I wasn't the only one who found this, was that Lewis doesn't give a definition of love in the Four Loves. So he writes a whole book on the love and never defines love, which is so remarkable. And one of my contributions is to propose a definition, an implicit definition that surfaces from the inner logic of his argument, even though Lewis does not explicitly say so. Another thing, I'll just mention one more. Another undiscovered or recently discovered thing about Lewis's thought, that it seemed to me that Lewis may have had a theological blind spot when it came to Mary, Jesus' mother, and the saints. I uncovered these very wise love principles that he develops in many of his works and that he applies very consistently, except when it comes to the saints. Suddenly, not only does he not apply them, he reverses them, and which just blew my mind. What is happening here? Why you're such a consistent thinker of a high caliber? What could explain this? So that may be one of the blind spots of Lewis, who among us doesn't have blind spots. If we can find a blind spot from Lewis, that's already remarkable, because he is so consistent and such a careful and robust thinker.
And again, we don't want to give too much away, but are there any secrets of your fellow academics that they have discovered about Lewis that you are able to share with us today?
Well, absolutely. I'll give you some hints. So as you know, we have 6 keynote speakers, and we've created space for dozens and dozens of short papers. The deadline for the short papers is, and the proposals, not the papers themselves, but just the proposals, is at the end, March 31st. But we've had already a couple dozen, more than a couple, almost three dozen submissions. And we haven't even started yet. So we're working really hard behind the scenes, reviewing these proposals. And some of them are just super incredibly interesting. And it breaks my heart because you can't go to all of them because there's just so many. We'll have concurrent sessions where you have to choose. But from the, so I won't say anything about them. I'll let these folks reveal their secrets, but I can give a few hints about our six keynote speakers. Now, the keynotes have been designed not just to talk about undiscovered or recently discovered or lesser discussed aspects of his work, but we're a public facing conference. We really want this to be inclusive of everyone, whether you're an academic or not. So we've chosen some themes that interest the general public. Michael Ward will revisit his revolutionary theory about the medieval cosmology superstructure in the Chronicles of Narnia. And his talk is called Planet Narnia Revisited. It's been almost 20 years since he made that discovery. What does he believe now, given all the, or some of the criticism, and maybe some new discoveries that may even support further his theory? So that's one. Dr. Holly Ordway, who in recent years has published two landmark books on Tolkien's modern reading, and most recently Tolkien's spiritual autobiography called Tolkien's Faith. Through her studies, she's revisited Tolkien's assumed disdain for the Chronicles of Narnia. And so she thinks it's more complex than previously assumed. And her talk is titled, I believe, What Did Tolkien Really Think About Narnia? And then Simon Horobin, the professor from Magdalen College, will be here to discuss Lewis and Tolkien's early friendship at the Oxford English School. He's uncovered some recently unpublished poems by Lewis, for example. And Horobin, as many probably know, basically has Lewis's position at Magdalen College. He is the tutorial fellow of English literature, a post previously held by Lewis, and the teaching responsibilities also fall along Lewis's role back in the year and back in his time. And Horobin has also revived Lewis's famous Beer and Beowulf sessions, but he's recasted it as, wait a minute, Beowulf and baking.
Okay.
So a little twist.
Is he going to be doing some baking at the conference then? He's going to be showing us how to cook.
That's a great idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I should pitch this to him, like have a special workshop, sure. Maybe. Those are the three first plenary speakers. The last three or trio, first of all, Stephanie Derrick. She published this wonderful book by Oxford University Press in 2018 called The Fame of C.S. Lewis. And she's going to be talking about Lewis's reception in America. One of the interesting things about Stephanie is that she uncovered a previously unpublished essay by Lewis called The Christmas Sermon to Pagans, which has now been republished. And it's a brilliant, witty essay where Lewis is asked to preach a Christmas sermon for pagans, and he begins his quote-unquote sermon by saying, I don't know if there are any pagans in England. Like, I wish there were, because one of the things pagans do really well is convert to Christianity. but post-Christians, they're a tougher bunch for these reasons that he then sets out to discuss. Dr. Stephen Beebe is the professor of communication studies emeritus from Texas State University, and he has probably one of the most exhaustive, or if not the largest, private collection of Lewis's manuscripts and letters and first editions and so on. So he'll be showcasing some of his prized valuables at the conference. And as a professor of communication, he's chosen to speak on Lewis the Expert Communicator, new discoveries from his writing and speaking. So that's, and I think he named it cleverly, Lewis the Expert Communicator, because our sixth keynote speaker titled his talk, Lewis the Rubbish Administrator. Unpublished vice president records at Magdalen College from Oxford. So this is Dr. Jadiel Perez, who defended a historical DPhil PhD at Oxford last year because it was the first ever DPhil in theology on Lewis at Oxford. So he has had a chance to study Lewis's unpublished vice president records at Magdalen, and the vice president role and responsibility used to rotate biannually. But Lewis was so rubbish that he only lasted 1 year. And when it came time to write his report, he chose to write a Shakespearean play, which he titled Lewis the Bald. And I suppose we're going to hear something about the humor and wit in this play.
Brilliant. Well, as you mentioned, Jason, you obviously, as well as those keynote speakers, and they all sound incredible, and as you say, sort of delving into some of the stuff we don't know about Lewis, you are, as you've already said, calling for papers. You're inviting people to submit proposals on that theme, the undiscovered Lewis. Would you share a little bit more about how people can get involved in that and what it is you're looking for? Because obviously, as a public-facing academic conference, I think you said that you're inviting scholarly but accessible papers. Would you just say a little bit more about what that means and how people can get involved if they want to?
Absolutely. So the call for papers is on our website. And I'd recommend, even if you've never done it, even if you've never sent a paper proposal, this is your chance, because we are accepting paper proposals from scholars from every stage of their career, whether they're students or tenured professors. And we've been receiving proposals from every stage of academic careers. What we are looking for is a short 300 to 500 word abstract idea, an outline of the idea that you want to develop in your paper, and what has been said about this previously, and how do you plan to extend our understanding of the subject. The call for papers lists six different categories under which you could tie your paper proposal. So, for example, historical studies that set Lewis in his own era, reassessments or critiques or reevaluations of our understanding of his life or his works and thoughts. We've got one category is comparative studies that compare and contrast Lewis with other figures. We also have like lesser known material, things that have gone unnoticed and deserve more attention than they've received, or presentations of recently unpublished material. And this is hard to come by, but we also have many sessions on stuff that has never seen the day of light or has been in a dusty library for several decades. So yeah, send them in. We've got a group of a committee who reviews them on a rolling basis and is able to give a decision every 3 or 4 weeks, just to make it easier for you to plan your trip. Oxford. I confuse Oregon and Oxford.
You could go to Oxford, but you wouldn't. I mean, you'd find lots of things, but not the conference.
You would. No, it's just that it looks like the Shire on beautiful. It looks like Cotswolds sometimes on a pretty day, and I confuse the two. But Oregon is absolutely gorgeous in September. It is so warm, and yet you have the dawn of autumn, of fall. And we plan to include like non-scholarly components. This is not just a bunch of academic nerds discussing Lewis. It's a bunch of normal nerds, whether academic or not. So we have two theatrical plays. One is going to premiere at the conference. It's never been held before. The other is by the famous, wonderful actor David Payne, his one-man show, An Evening with C.S. Lewis, which is just remarkable. I've seen it once. We'll also have other cultural activities, and we'll have the pre-screening of a brand new documentary on the friendship of Tolkien and Lewis. Actually, it's going to be a series of multi-episodes, a serial documentary, and we'll see some never before shown. We'll basically be the first audience to get to watch it. So I'm really excited about the non-academic plans for the conference as well.
And there's obviously great wine as well.
Oh, absolutely. There's probably 100 or 200 vineyards within like a 10-mile radius.
There we go. So, if it all gets too much, take some of your fellow nerds and go on a wine tasting trip.
We've got great Airbnbs here, so...
Great.
You want to book them in advance.
Well, Jason, I'm going to make sure that there are links to the conference and how people can get involved with those papers in the show notes. But just as we finish, I was thinking perhaps the best way to discover something about Lewis would have been to ask him directly. So my final question to you is, if you had the opportunity to ask Lewis just one question, I know this is going to be really tricky, what would it be? What would it be to discover what you could about Lewis?
Oh, my goodness, Ruth. That's unfair. Oh, man, I have a lot of theological questions, a lot of philosophical questions, but also dumb questions like, we need to talk about Mrs. Moore.
Yes, we do. We really do.
Yeah, and the plan is, so this is the inaugural Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference. Our second C.S. Lewis Conference will certainly have a plenary talk titled, We Need to Talk About Mrs. Moore. So we're already planning ahead.
There we go. So once you've asked him, then we're totally fine and we can just deliver all that information.
We already know, but...
Well, Jason, just give us that link if people don't know it. How do we get involved with the conference, the inaugural Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference?
So you can Google the C.S. Lewis Initiative or the Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference. Both of them will take you to the right page. Or even the Portland C.S. Lewis Society. Any one of those three will take you to the right page.
Great. And as I said, it will all be in the show information as well. So if you're listening to this, you can just click straight on that link. But Jason, thank you so much. We're not done with you yet. We're going to be hearing much more about some of your PhD research and the other interesting things that you're working on. But thank you so much for letting us know about the conference.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on to pitch the conference. I hope to see many of you there.
Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources, and podcasts. And do register there for the chance to win a free book. That's premierunbelievable.com. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.
If you follow Jesus, you're already doing God's work, not just on Sundays or in church, but in those emails and financial reports, at kitchen tables or on the school run. I'm pastor and author Tom Nelson, and in my new podcast, God's Work, we're going to completely change how you think about your job. So step into my office for some weekly workplace wisdom. Search God's Work with Tom Nelson on Premiere Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.